Hawaii's minimum wage has been raised to $10.10 an hour for the calendar year 2018, in line with the national trend. Today we're looking at what that means, what possible impacts can we expect for workers and for businesses, and how will it affect you, the listener?
We're asking our listeners to join in the conversation by calling us at 941-3689 on Oahu or at 1-877-941-3689 on Neighbor Islands. Joining me in the Catherine in the studio is Randy Gaunt's Economic Justice Chair of the Young Progressives Demanding Action. He's a graduate student at Hawaii Pacific University studying global leadership in sustainable development and a supporter of an increase of the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
And Tom Jones is the president and co-owner of Gutaku Restaurants and a past chairman of the Hawaii Restaurant Association. He has managed restaurants in Hawaii for the past 30 years. The Hawaii Restaurant Association has opposed increases in Hawaii state minimum wage.
Again, real briefly, those numbers are 941-3689 on Oahu, 1-877-941-3689 on Neighbor Islands, our places beyond Hawaii. And let us hear from you. Well, we've got representatives pro and con, Catherine, of the of the issue. Tom, let's start with you. You've been employing workers at the minimum wage for 30 years now. How does it work in the restaurant business?
Well, I think for the most part, the minimum wage employees that we do hire are generally tipped employees. So I've been here, again, for 30 years. For the most part, we've been paying dishwashers, which is our entry-level position, at or above the minimum wage, you know, or maybe 50 cents to an hour above that, just as a starting wage because of the competitive market here in Hawaii. Now it's the unemployment rate is so acute, it's less than or about 2% or less. So it's a real challenge. So we can't find employees to come in that aren't making tips that would work for the minimum wage.
In your 30 years here, is this the worst that you've seen as far as being able to get workers for your jobs?
Yes, absolutely. It's I think probably about 8 or 9 years ago, the employment rate dipped down to around 3%, and that was a real challenge then. Now the unemployment rate is even lower, and there are more and more restaurants. People are cooking at home less and eating out more, and it's really created a tremendous burden on the restaurants to be able to produce enough food and service to meet our guest needs.
Randy, what's the perspective of Young Progressives Demanding Action?
Sure, sure. We are really in support of an increase in minimum wage. Our restaurant industry in Hawaii is right around 14% of our workforce, so it leaves a large amount of our workforce vulnerable to low wages that have been stagnant for decades now. They've also been suppressed in some areas. So it's really difficult in Hawaii, specifically with the high cost of living and things of that nature. So we think it's the right thing to do. We think that our workers really deserve the support that they need to make a living, to support a family in Hawaii. And we want to make sure that the lifeline, which is their income, is supported in equivalent to what we have cost-wise in Hawaii.
Tom, would such an increase be sustainable for the restaurant industry?
To $15 an hour?
15.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a 50% increase over where we are right now.
Exactly.
Well, I think the important thing to keep in mind is that as the minimum wage has gone up, in order for us to keep profitable and maintain our businesses, we need to raise our prices. And so I guess the question really is, what's the tipping point at which sales will really start to significantly decrease when menu prices, rise to meet that? And, menu prices have been going up and up. So there is an inflationary aspect of that kind of a price or wage increase.
Because basically you're just going to pass it on to your customer.
We have to. Otherwise, we can't be in business. Or, at the end of the day, we need to make a profit to stay in business.
We have heard that a hike in the minimum wage will lift millions out of poverty. Do you agree with that?
I do think in Hawaii it would help our lower income, lower class people. I don't really see it as being an anti-poverty initiative straight away, but I do see it actually helping a lot. For anti-poverty, we do have the new state and earned tax credit, the working families tax credit, that's really going to help out our working families. But more so, it's really going to be a benefit to those who are on the lower income bracket, that are the middle class, that are the lower class, that are the working families. Some of the poverty, some of them aren't even seeking employment, things of that nature. But when they are able to obtain employment, I think it will absolutely help them get up on their feet and be able to have a livable wage where they can have a home over their head and be competitive in this economy in Hawaii, that just, it's really not tilted in the favor of the working class person currently.
Randy, you've got figures on how many people are making minimum wage in Hawaii today, right?
Right, right. It was about 2013 was when the Labor Department released, it's about 325,000 residents right around the minimum wage area. And again, that's probably a little bit different now, 2017. We have, again, our unemployment rate is at the lowest it's ever been, which is great. You know, people are getting jobs and they are able to work, which is good stuff. But I wanted to address kind of that the minimum wage, how it increases food price or increases prices of your product or whatever you're going to be selling as a business. While this is true, absolutely, in some instances. But there has been a lot of reviewed literature that found that that about 10% of the U.S. minimum wage increase, if it goes up 10%, it increases food prices no more than about 4%, or overall prices no more than about 0.4%. So, but we have to remember that this is a kind of a business owner's choice to increase those wages. And you know, what we would really like to see is some businesses, those that have the capacity, is innovate and see what ways they can really, you know, cut out costs in their business model to provide that increased minimum or increased profit to their people. So other larger businesses pass the cost on the consumers because they're failing to kind of reevaluate that business model. So again, everyone's scrambling to reduce costs, their marginal costs, and increase profit as much as possible. But we really want to make sure that our workers are at center. Those are the ones that really support all of Hawaii, our working class, and they support the businesses that are in business. If you don't have workers, you don't have income coming in and out. So we want to make sure that, you know, that we can have a business looking at all different aspects. How can we, you know, reduce some things that aren't selling well? How can we, you know, maybe close on Sunday evenings or things like that nature?
Tom, just before the show, you showed us a video taken at an airport restaurant in which the wait staff had basically been eliminated. You sit down at your table and you make your order on an iPad. I happen to have eaten at that particular airport restaurant.
Right.
And I was shocked at how few people it took to keep the whole operation running. And that's one way to deal with a heightened minimum wage. It's not one that is particularly friendly to the worker, right?
Right. We're in the hospitality industry.
Yeah.
And that's what we call ourselves anyways. We do our best to really make our guests feel welcome. And when I saw that restaurant in the airport concourse, I was not feeling that it was particularly hospitable. There wasn't a friendly smile and all that. So I'm loath to think about, you know, that as an option for
robot waiters.
Right, exactly. However, you know, as Randy points out, we need to be able to make a profit, and we need to look at every aspect of our business and how we can, you know, save costs and control costs. I think for the most part, restaurateurs in particular have been doing that for the last, you know, 30 or 40 years. We're operating at a very slim margin, and we're faced with a lot of you know, additional costs and burns, grease traps, you know, the health, you know, the new health permits and all that stuff. So we're really pushed, you know, in a lot of different directions by mandates to keep, you know, to meet our costs. And so it's a real challenge to eke out even 2 or 3% in restaurants in many cases. So we're pretty much there already. The question really is how is this going to affect, you know, the jobs and these other positions? The pressure is to increase prices or to reduce costs. And in some cases, it's either the number of people that you have or the number of hours that they work. And again, we try to drive efficiencies. But at the end of the day, somebody can end up working, you know, an hour less and making the same amount they did the week before. That really doesn't help them.
Tom and Randy, we've got a caller on the line, a business owner from Haleiwa. Will, are you on the line? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Well, what you got on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to voice my support for the minimum wage increase because the minimum wage, even this new minimum wage, is not a living wage. I have janitors at the shopping center, and, you know, we have to pay them the market rate because the janitor's salary is a shared expense, and I just can't raise that what I pay the janitor. But if the minimum wage were raised, then I could, and I just know, you know, the janitors, it's just not a the minimum wage is just not a living wage. A lot of our janitors are homeless, so I think $15 is a start. I actually think it should be closer to $18, And I understand the restaurant owner, his position, but I think that, you know, we need to have a bigger discussion about changing the economy in ways that are more, you know, like financial services, things that are more profitable than hospitality. So I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
Well, I don't think you'll find a lot of disagreement with that whole idea of a kind of a shift in the economy, yeah?
Yeah, and actually, as you were calling in with your question, we kind of got high fives from both of our guests today. Do you want to chime in on what he's raised?
Well, he mentioned the living wage, and we're talking about the minimum wage, and then there's talk about the living wage. And so these are two different kind of I guess the living wage is a new concept for the minimum wage. When I was 15 and back in the 70s and I took my first job, I was making $1.50 an hour. I was a high school student. It was a summer job, and $1.50 was probably a fair amount for what I did at that time. I don't know that at that time, in our history that we were thinking that, you know, people earning that minimum wage were going to actually be able to provide themselves, full support for their entire life. And things have changed a lot. So back then, when you go to McDonald's, it was staffed with high school and college students, and rarely did you see an adult working at a fast food operation. And now, you know, the demand on our restaurants and the people eating out has changed significantly. And so it creates an entirely different paradigm for business operators trying to run businesses and hiring people that need to support a family.
Let me just take a moment to reintroduce our guests. Joining me and Catherine in the studio is Randy Gontz, Economic Justice Chair of Young Progressive Demanding Action. He advocates an increase to $15 an hour for the minimum wage. Tom Jones is a past chairman of the Hawaii Restaurant Association, which is a lot more interested in keeping the minimum wage where it is. We're asking listeners to call in at these numbers, 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 on Neighbor Islands, because we do want to hear from people listening in. Randy, the issue was just raised, and Tom, you mentioned it, and we're sort of circling around that, the difference between a minimum wage and a living mm-hmm. wage. Mm-hmm. And what you said, Randy, was that one out of five people in Hawaii is making the current minimum wage.
Absolutely.
Few would say that's a living wage, right?
Right, absolutely. I believe that in today's economy, the minimum wage has to be a living wage. I mean, we don't have the support from our economy that we did back in 20, 30 years ago. It's been decades since the workers had a raise because of the cost of inflation, the cost of living, and this is exacerbated here in Hawaii a large amount because of our economy. And we've seen, CEO pay go up 300-400%, but we have seen workers' pay just stay stagnant and in a lot of cases be suppressed. So, I really enjoy that comment that the caller had about we really got to have a larger conversation, because we do believe, YPDA and myself, that this is treating a symptom. Minimum wage is treating a symptom of a larger problem, of a larger, if you want to call it like a medical symptom, it's the larger disease we have where, we really got to understand of where the fundamental issue of making money in our economy. Is it okay that the top earners in this country are doing much, much, much better, and even through the recession, doing much, much better than the majority of us who are working and supplying all these goods and services to the people of our country, and specifically in our state?
Mm. A caller named Paul from Maui wants to weigh in on it. It's kind of relevant to what you just said, Randy. Paul, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Thank you very much, Chris, for taking my call.
Sure.
I suppose this is kind of a revolutionary idea, but I believe that residential property ownership should be illegal, and that people who are, wherever you live, you should own. You probably paid for it anyway. If you've lived there for 15 or 20 years, you probably paid for the place anyway. I think that you should only be able to own where you live, and that's it. And that would end the problem of people being homeless, and it would also deal with the whole situation of the minimum wage problem, because the minimum wage is never going to be able to support someone and keep them not being homeless. It's so upsetting that people are working full time and still are homeless. This is wrong. And here on Maui, for example, you've got all these vacation rentals that are taking up all the possibilities of people, you know, having places to live for themselves who are working here on the island. This has got to be done. Affordable housing is the biggest problem that we face in Hawaii, and we need to deal with it, and we need to deal with it forthrightly. And I'll listen to what you guys have to say about that off the air. Thank you very much.
You bet, Paul. Thanks for calling in. That kind of dovetails into a much larger problem. It's sort of a tangential issue in a way, but we keep coming back to this whole idea of making a living, and I'm still startled by what you were telling me, Randy, about the sheer proportion of people working at minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, as a restaurateur, describing your workers as working for minimum wage isn't entirely accurate, as you have the whole issue of tips and tip credits.
Right, exactly. And I think it's just because the Restaurant Association doesn't support an increase in the minimum wage doesn't mean we don't support our employees and want to pay them as much as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And I think this is one area when we start to talk about the tip credit. So in restaurants all across Hawaii this week, you know, tipped employees will be getting an 85-cent increase in pay, and cooks and dishwashers in the back who are making $11 or $12 or $13 an hour will not be getting a commensurate increase in pay. And the tip credit is a really important thing for people to understand. Federally, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. And in states that follow the federal law, they can pay their tipped employees as low as $2.13 an hour, provided that the employee makes up the difference in their tips. In Hawaii, the minimum wage is now $10.10, and we can pay our tipped employees, I believe, $9.35 an hour with a 75-cent tip credit. But many of those servers, you know, and tipped employees are earning, you know, $10, $20, $30, $40, $50, $60 an hour in tips. And I think the position that the Restaurant Association is very clear on is that we don't feel that those employees should be considered minimum wage employees. If they're earning multiples of the minimum wage, then employers who create that environment for those employees to earn that kind of income should be given credit for that. And then we would be able to, you know, give that money to people in the back of the house. And another important, you know, thing to note, if you go to a restaurant, look around, you'll see that, of course, you don't see into the kitchen too much unless there's an open kitchen. But if there's an open kitchen, you can count heads. For every one person in the kitchen, there's usually two people in the dining room. So this 85-cent increase in pay, which with benefits actually is about $1.35 an hour, turns into $2.50 that could be diverted to somebody in the back of the house. And I think that's where we really, as restaurateurs of full-service restaurants, really take exception with minimum wage and the lack of a meaningful tip credit here in Hawaii.
But aren't there businesses that share the tips and then split it with all the workers?
Well, there's federal law and there's state law.
Yeah.
And the federal law prohibits sharing of tips beyond the kitchen door. And so it would be illegal for me to create a tip pool and share the tips with the kitchen in the back. So we can create tip pools by law, which allow us to share tips with the hostesses and the bussers and the people that provide direct service to the customers. But the federal law draws the line at the kitchen door.
Why?
Well, that's a good question. It's the Department of Labor's take on it. There is some talk about, you know, changing that in the federal level. There's a court case right now. There was court cases in Oregon related to that. And now that we have a different administration, the pressure on that is a little bit off because, of course, you have Republicans that are a little bit more pro-business on that. So the administration makes a difference. But it's a real challenge. And so state minimum wages with state, you know, varying state tip credits and the federal are all over the place, and it makes it really difficult for restaurateurs across the, you know, across the country to operate their restaurants the same way.
Mm-hmm. We've also heard the argument that small increases aren't meaningful. You know, not enough to get you off welfare or not enough to get you into a house. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Sure. I mean, I think an increase in wages, no matter what the percentage, is going to be a net benefit to people who are living paycheck to paycheck. Again, bring it back to the ones who are the working class people that really rely on these income for, you know, health insurance, rely to put food on the table, how they're going to put gas in their car to take their kids to school. But there is something to be said that if we keep only doing it marginally. So, you know, for instance, Hawaii, we have increasing to 9, now 10, and then we're looking for this new Fight for 15, which is going to be a huge coalition when you're working this legislative session to kind of support. It's another incremental increase over a few years. So it will give some time for the businesses to adapt, but also, you know, would we like to see a large increase happen sooner rather than later? Sure, but we also are, you know, we do sympathize with some of the businesses, and specifically the restaurants, because we do know that restaurants and retail will take the brunt of some of the other aspects of it. But again, it's really the business's burden to bear to really make sure that our, you know, the population is supported and things of that nature. And 14% of our workers in restaurants here, you know, there's a really large percentage of people who are not in the restaurant industry still working minimum wage that really, really could use an increase.
We've got a number of calls coming in. We have one, Donald from Kona. He's a professor. Donald, good morning.
Hi. Yes, I'm Donald Lunch. I'm a Mary K. Finley, Missouri Distinguished Professor of Computer Engineering at Missouri University of Science and Technology. I'm visiting Kona for a conference, and I'd like to point out that that increase in minimum wage would have a massive undesired effect. It would be very helpful to my engineering students to get more jobs in automation, and it would cause a lot of people to lose jobs that are the very people that you're trying to help. And so I would like to suggest a more compassionate alternative and a more effective alternative, which was recommended by Warren Buffett about a year ago, and that is to increase the earned income tax credit. And what that would do is if somebody has a lot of dependents, they'd be eligible, and they could take one of these low-wage jobs, and the tax credit would make up the difference. But you'd also help that teenager or that person with no dependents coming back from maybe a setback in life or something like that to rejoin the workforce. And it would be far more compassionate and far more effective in creating a minimum wage. The other issue is in a place like Honolulu or Seattle, you might be able to absorb that. But you're overlooking the massive number of people in the rural Midwest for whom it would just be a disaster. So anyway, I think that you really need to be careful about what you decide to do. It's important to be compassionate. It's important to be able to help people. But the two things are you have to watch out for automation. That's already cost a lot of jobs in this country. And it's not going to be solved by regulating it out of existence because it's going to happen. It's inexorable. And so you have to face the reality and say, what can we do that's more compassionate, more effective, will really help the people you're trying to help? I think an earned income tax credit is the answer. And the second thing is shoving a one-size-fits-all solution on the whole country will not work. It's fine for a city to decide we want to do this, but that same solution will not work in rural America. So I'm going to hang up now. I'm looking forward to hearing your response.
Donald, thanks for your call. Tom Jones of the Hawaii Restaurant Association, earlier in the show, your reaction to an increase of the minimum wage to $15 was that it would be pretty disruptive for you as a restaurateur, and that you had cited the example of a restaurant that had basically automated to get around that.
Right.
And would an increase, of almost a 50% increase in the minimum wage, drive restaurants toward automation?
It's already happening. And I guess I'm really proud of the restaurant industry as a whole because we were able to provide these, you know, tipped income positions to, you know, mothers, single moms, you know, college students, where they can earn a reasonably good salary without, you know, necessarily having a college education or a significant amount of training. And these are really important jobs for our community. I don't know that any other industry can provide jobs that pay $10, $20, $30 an hour to, you know, people that don't have a college education, and the restaurant industry is one of those. If the minimum wage were to increase to $15 an hour and we didn't have a reasonable tip credit, then certainly automation for placing orders would be part of the program. And you'll see it, you know, even if you look at there's some sushi go-around restaurants here in Honolulu. Now, I won't mention any names, but, you know, you order on the computer. It's coming. It's coming. And so these very important positions of employment for people are you know, likely to disappear, and that's really unfortunate.
One thing I want to add is on the note of automation, it's a little bit different. It's more outsourcing, but I went through a fast food outlet and found out that they were actually having the order takers in the Philippines. So as you drove up in the drive-thru, you were talking to a gal in the Philippines.
Absolutely.
And we were one of the test markets. Not too many people know about that, but just kind of an interesting note.
I would like to comment that, you know, this kind of automation and companies really reducing marginal costs, it's inevitable with our current economic model. So I wouldn't I'd be stretched to say it was exclusive because of a minimum wage increase. I mean, that definitely, again, is a symptom maybe of a company looking to, you know, see where they can cut costs. But it's with technology becoming more accessible and becoming cheaper on every aspect and, again, outsourcing and you know, putting those jobs out to different countries and things like that, that they can pay, you know, cents on the dollar. It's inevitable by the time that we start having an economy that is run by more computer programs, things of that. We see it happen all the time. Our marginal costs, you know, now are coming down to zero in some aspects. That's why we see newspapers and things, you know, going out of business and then going strictly online, because you can produce, you can be a prosumer instead of a consumer now by just, you know, being at home and starting a blog and making a newspaper in that regard. So to make it exclusive to a $15 hike or a minimum wage hike would be a little bit of a stretch, but I do think it's something we should be really concerned about and seeing where we can do more of a collaborative effort. I mean, I really think that our economy needs to change to a more collaborative commons in the future before we start seeing this automative type environment really taking over and pushing a lot of jobs out, because they will. And again, you know, going back to the economic model, something we can discuss, it's a whole different issue, but there has been a representative in our state legislature that wants to research a UBI, a universal basic income, which would actually completely, you know, take the conversation off of minimum wage and then bring that universal basic income in, which I personally think would be a better alternative to kind of symptomizing these issues. So
I can quite imagine the different reactions you get to that idea.
Sure, absolutely.
I want to bring in the perspective of Nitai of Hawaii Kai as a front of the house restaurant employee. Nitai, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've worked in the restaurant industry for years. I've had my own cafe on the North Shore, and I can totally relate to a lot of the issues, especially, I mean, it's good that you have a restaurateur in there, because that's actually one of the most difficult markets in Hawaii when it comes, because you're so much overhead. There's waste. I mean, there's just the variables just continue on. But as I work in the front of the house, back of the house, in New York and Philadelphia, and a lot here in Hawaii, and you know, with the front of the house, the issue's not so bad, because if you're making minimum wage and you're getting tips in the front of the house, you're doing well. You can pay your college loan off. But if you're in the back of the house, and in the back of the house is where the long term, you got to stick with it for years to have the speed and the agility to work with new crews and go into any restaurant, and you know, and the back of the house gets stiff so hard. It's like, I am not in the restaurant industry anymore. I'm painting houses and stuff because I can't live off of what the kitchen staff gets paid, even after years of experience. And the best part, you know, you really need good cooks in the kitchen, and I think that we've got to find a way to share the profit with the back of the house. Find some way to bring ownership to the kitchen crew. They'll stick around longer and everything if they can get profit sharing or some type of incentive for their hard work, that they can see that on a busy night they're making more as well, not just the front of the house. No matter how busy it gets, the kitchen doesn't make any more or any less.
Nitai, we're going to go right to another call. Aaron from Haleiwa, it sounds as if they're very similar concern. Aaron, are you there? Anyway, as Nitai was talking, Tom Jones of the Hawaii Restaurant Association, you don't disagree, right?
No, it's a real challenge. I would be paying my cooks a lot more if I didn't have to pay the server so much, and it's you know, it's unfortunate that the law is the way it is, but I'm constrained at this point, unless there's a change in the Supreme Court rules or what have you, that we're kind of stuck on that.
I'm still struggling to understand that particular law.
It's I think we would describe it as pro labor law, but pro which side of the, you know, of the kitchen door labor is a real challenge.
Absolutely.
There's a concern that with this hike in the minimum wage that people might either lose their jobs or have their hours cut back. Do you see that happening at your restaurant?
Well, we're certainly working on our productivity. With this increase, I think it's, you know, in my business, the minimum wage is going to cost me probably $70,000 to $80,000 a year with benefits and all that combined. So it's not a small amount of money. So we need to do what we can do. We're going to raise prices, and we need to look for efficiencies. And so it could result in schedule changes.
Your margin is what?
Our margin? Yeah. Profit margin?
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell.
Well, I mean, just...
It's slim.
You were saying that restaurants in general operate at a profit margin in the 2 or 3% range.
Yeah,
is that
right,
accurate?
Exactly right, yeah. It's a challenge, and the difference between success and failure in the restaurants is pretty slim.
I kind of agree. I mean, there is aspects of the restaurant industry, again, reiterate that they will take, you know, some of the brunt of the other side of the aspects, but... Also, I mean, there's so many great studies and research out there that show that, you know, the ones that are doing good and the ones who are actually really staples in the community, those who have a great customer service and treat their workers well, you know, really absorb the minimum wage increase really well. And they retain more. They don't have to have more turnover costs, things of that nature. There's a working paper done by Michael Luca of the Harvard Business School and his wife, Dara Luca, from the Mathematica Policy Research, and they examined closure rates of restaurants in San Francisco Bay Area where they started doing those minimum wage increases from about 2008 to 2016 in a period where various communities in the region raised their minimum wages. And they showed that the ones and they looked at kind of like Yelp reviews and some of these new ways to review businesses and the ones that have historically gotten, you know, bad reviews or have not treated their workers well ended up having a large hit from the minimum wage increase. But the ones who were, you know, 5 stars and above and who really treated everyone well and were staples in the community and really gave back to the community, they actually sometimes did even better because they were seen as those that were supporting community members, supporting workers. And there was more incentive for people to spend their money at these places, which is phenomenal. And I think that that's a really great model to show that, you know, if you really, as a restaurant owner or something like that nature, can innovate, become an ocean-friendly restaurant where you're using, you know, recyclable resources, locally sourced food, things of that nature, you're going to bring in new people that say, you know what, I want to support these people for doing locally sourced kind of food options and things like that nature.
Yeah. I could agree with you more. Paying employees, you know, a good wage and making sure that they're well taken care of means they're going to stay with you and you're going to, you know, your business is going to thrive. The big issue that we have in the restaurant industry, again, is the tip aspect of it, that the tipped employees are so highly compensated and the law restricts us from sharing with them, is that we're at a, you know, imagine that I have to pay $70,000 this year more to bussers and servers. How am I going to pay my cooks more money now? You know, where's that money going to come from? And again, it's going to be increased wages, but I mean, increased menu prices, but I can't make that change on a dime and just make it happen. It's a gradual process. So it's very, very challenging for us to be able to, to pay the back of the house what they deserve.
If you're just joining us, our guests in the studio are Randy Gauntz, Economic Justice Chair of the Young Progressives Demanding Action, and Tom Jones, President and Co-Owner of Gutaku Restaurants and a past Chairman of the Hawaii Restaurant Association. How does the minimum wage affect your budget for 2018? We've got callers on the line. We've got one from...
John from Kaimuki. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I just want to make the observation that it seems that all of the people who are opposing an increase to the minimum wage are themselves not making the minimum wage. They're making way more.
Thanks for calling in. Another caller, Sean from Kaneohe. Sean,
hello,
can you hear me?
I'm calling about the minimum wage.
Yeah.
If I'm correct, wasn't it started basically during the FDR's administration? It was basically the minimum amount you could pay a worker so that he could survive on a daily income. It seems now, since then, it's turned into the minimum amount an employer is allowed to pay his employee and get away with it. I'd like you guys' opinions, and I'll hang up.
Tom?
Well, as I said, you know, we pay what the market will bear in many cases, or what we can, you know, pay and make a profit. I've been paying dishwashers for 30 years, you know, above minimum wage on a regular basis because that's what the market, you know, will bear. I have to pay them that much to get them to even come through the door. And so, you know, there's also a value of what, you know, how much money we can make, what the numbers turn out to be. So profitability is important, too. But I don't think that we're trying to gouge anybody. You know, restaurateurs, I started as a dishwasher when I was a kid. I've been in the business. I've worked every job. So I have compassion and understanding for all those positions in the restaurant.
Let's bring in a caller, Ken from Honolulu. Ken, can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a landscape maintenance business owner, and I've been struggling with this 40% increase in minimum wage for the past 4 years. And trying to keep up with it. And I paid above minimum wage for my entry-level workers, which is about 15% of my staff. But they all work their way up into the 20s an hour as they get more skill sets. But they have to start unskilled and work their way up. But now my top-end guys are complaining that the lower-end guys are moving up. So I've been moving everybody up. My customers, if they're commercial customers, they won't allow me to raise more than 3% a year. Or else they go out to bid for a service that does less than us. And my residential customers go to the cash market, where there's the majority of the residential landscape maintenance is. And if you talk about economic justice, you got all these, you got a law, you know, that says that they have to be legal employers, but no one's stopping, in my industry, the under-the-table work going on. And they're making the rule-following companies like mine increase all our rates, and it's driving business into the cash market. So it's been a struggle. I'm having my worst year in 15 years because of my customers are not bearing the cost of my expense increases.
Ken, thanks for calling in. I just want to remind our listeners, our guests are Tom Jones of the Hawaii Restaurant Association, and Randy Gontz of the Young Progressives Demanding Action. And I want to address this to both of you because we keep coming to this idea of a tipping point where it no longer becomes sustainable for you, Tom, to run a business. It no longer makes sense for people to work at a wage they can't make a living at. There's got to be a tipping point somewhere in here in which the system kind of gets disrupted beyond repair.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really kind of reiterate again that, you know, we are treating a symptom here. You know, we really want to make sure our workers have a livable wage. And so in that regard, this minimum wage increase is essential. But, you know, we do have to look at the longevity and sustainability of our economy and how, you know, at what point can we say that our economy is giving too many benefits to the top and not enough to the bottom. So our workers are getting, you know, slighted on a lot of things. And I was talking to a great friend of mine last night who owns Kalapawai Deli out in Kailua, and he was mentioning the same thing. He just did his budget and, you know, and saw that, you know, now that some of his minimum wage workers previously are now making the same that some others were making after they got their raise. So he doesn't have the ability to bump them up. So, and then those inner worker conflicts, I mean, will have to be discussed in-house. Me personally as a worker, I would be, you know, over the moon if one of my coworkers was able to make more money because I know we're all in this struggle together, right? And there is a little bit of conflict up there. But, you know, when you're in a business where you feel like a part of the family, I would really like to kind of hope that everyone would be, you know, glad that if you're getting a wage increase that, you know, you wouldn't be saying we're competing for a certain area or something, but making sure you still retain your job, I guess, is important as well.
I want to interject something. Most folks might think, oh, minimum wage is going to go up for everybody, but it apparently isn't. There are exemptions, whether it's coffee farmers or small ag farms, relatives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. My mother owned a small business when I was growing up in high school. After the recession, she lost her job at MBNA, one of the biggest banks that laid off a lot of people. So she opened up her own antique shop. And I was her primary employee, and obviously I love her to death, and I wanted our family to do well, so I worked for free, you know, for many years until, you know, she was able to give me some compensation and things like that. So there are a little bit of an exemptions, you know, for certain people who are able to make a minimum wage and not. And I think we were reviewing some of those earlier today, and we were surprised to see some of the aspects that were exempt from the minimum wage.
Right, because you were talking domestic workers, runs the gamut.
Right, absolutely.
Aaron from Holly Eva has called us. He has concerns over the tip law. Aaron, thanks for being so patient. I wanted to bring you in on this. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hopefully reception is good for you guys.
Sounds good. Go ahead.
Okay. During your guys' conversation, just want to touch in on one thing. To me, it seems as if we need to somehow educate the consumers or the visitors that are here visiting and frequenting all of our restaurants. My wife works at one of the local restaurants on the North Shore and finds that when this popular restaurant shifts over to the trickle-down effect type tip protocol, it really relied on the customers tipping fairly based on the dollar amount that they spent. If they didn't, then it quickly backfired because she ends up having to pay out of her own money to take care of the folks in the back house. However, if the consumer tipped fairly and did really well, then everything works out great. But we have so many visitors coming from all over different parts of the world, and some of those places don't tip the same kind of way that they might do in Hawaii. And so it seems like if we're going to switch something over or make sort of, you know, standard across the restaurant industry or what have you, that we should really try and focus on educating folks. I don't know how you would go about doing that. Maybe it would help the tourism industry. I'll take your guys' thoughts offline.
You know, Tom, what he was just saying about tips basically depending on the generosity of the customers, European restaurants have a service charge just added on. They don't – it's not even discussed, right?
Correct. It's also like that in Japan too. So there are certain – you know, the tourism industry or food service industry at the North Shore or Waikiki, places like that, do have difficulty sometimes with customers not understanding what the American custom is and paying tips accordingly. Generally speaking, in the long run, though, that kind of works out. That does happen, but it's not as frequent as one might, you know, think. Or it depends on the type of restaurant and what type of customer that it attracts. You know, it is an issue.
We've seen in some restaurants where they just tell you, you know, flat out, 20% will be added to your bill, or for large groups as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you look at that?
Well, if you have a mandatory service charge as opposed to a tip, then it's subject to you know, GET taxes and a whole variety of other issues. So most restaurants try to stay away from that so they don't have to pay additional taxes or the customers would have to pay extra taxes as well.
Because if it's formalized, it becomes subject to taxation.
Right. A tip is between a customer and the employee
voluntary.
Or employees. It's voluntary. Although, interestingly enough, you know, a lot of people have criticized the restaurant industry and say, hey, you're trying to take money away from these servers. In fact, right now there's a national campaign with Jane Fonda on television, you know, chastising restaurants. It's really unfortunate. But restaurateurs have to pay FICA on the tips that the employee claims. So if it was purely their income, then they should have to pay self-employment tax on that. As business owners do. So we are responsible for paying additional benefits on tips that they claim, even though we don't technically have any right to, you know, to that money.
We have a caller from Lenny who's been holding. Sarah, what would you like to add to this conversation?
It just seems to me that this is a systemic problem, just like one of the speakers said, that these are just symptoms of what's going on in business. But it seems like the onus is on the working people that, you know, having to ask for minimum wage is problematic. You know, they're waiting for everything to trickle down and do the favor and give them some money. And the trickle-down theory does not work economically. I think there needs to be more transparency about the problem with the disparity with the wages. I mean, at the high level and at the low level. I mean, there's an enormous gap. I'm just going to take my comment off.
Thanks very much for calling in with that comment.
I would agree 100%. Again, she nailed on the head that, you know, we have to continue to keep asking for more and more because the economy isn't supporting the lower income and lower economic status people's And it's interesting enough, I also am a staffer at the state legislature, and my current representative is looking at possibly an increase in minimum wage, but doing it off of a median wage. So saying what the median range wage is per fluctuation and inflation and things of that nature, instead of just continue to come back and ask for a specific number, right? So, for example, in Hawaii, the current minimum wage last year was $9.25. That's 48% of our state's median wage. So when it goes up to $10.10, which it did this year, it'll be around 51%. So we want to kind of see that median wage be matched up with how much you get paid. So if this bill, you know, pie in the sky gets passed, then we would see if once the median wage fluctuates and goes up, that floating minimum wage will also go up with it. So you don't have to continue to come back and say, no, now we need 16, now we need 17, things of that nature, 16.25. It would float with that median wage, which is an alternative, you know, to actually just going and asking for a specific number for a minimum wage.
What do you think about that, Tom?
Well, it's interesting, you know, that the legislature is, you know, monkeying around with these numbers and trying to come up with formulas that they think are going to actually solve the problem. It's a very complex problem, and it requires a really complex solution. And what I don't really think we're talking about is what are we doing to help people earn their maximum wage as opposed to, you know, setting some sort of a minimum. And so I was watching GPS with Fareed Zakaria the other day, and they were talking about the amount of money that the German government invests in their apprenticeship programs and things like that. And
yes.
I think it's like $5 billion compared to, you know, $250 million that the United States puts in. And so I really think that fundamentally we need to be looking at what is, you know, not to put the burden on businesses to solve this problem, but to work together as a community to figure out how we can help people, you know, achieve more with their lives, not only, you know, financially, but also, you know, personally and develop, you know, professionally.
A caller from Kaneohe, Tom. We're almost running out of time, Tom, but I wanted you to get a chance to weigh in. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Go ahead.
My question is, you know, historically in Hawaii, where the minimum wage is usually raised when the economy is doing well, and historically the Chamber of Commerce, the Small Business Association, they have consistently voted opposed it. And my question is, why is that?
Tom?
I think the Chamber and the Restaurant Association philosophically oppose an increase in the minimum wage because we feel that it's not really necessary. Again, I would dispute that there's 325,000 people in Hawaii earning minimum wage. That's a pretty significant part of the population. And I think most of those people are probably tipped employees.
Therefore earning more?
And therefore actually earning more. Yeah, technically they're earning the minimum wage or a lower portion of it, but in reality they're earning multiples of it and making a significant amount of income. So, you know, if we're paying more than the minimum wage for dishwashers right now, what's the point of moving the minimum wage up yet again? I would be looking at, you know, how can we help businesses provide more for their employees and actually recognize them for providing the things that they do? We provide health insurance, you know, for the majority of our employees. It's hard to hire somebody and have them working only, you know, 19 hours a week. I provide health insurance for, you know, 100 employees and other benefits as well. So, you know, businesses, I think, should be recognized for what they do contribute, and the government should be looking at us as opposed to being, you know, the evil person or the, you know, the taking advantage of our employees to how they can help us, you know, contribute more and help our employees more.
We should also point out that a lot of people do work more than one jobs just mm-hmm. to make ends meet in Hawaii. So whether it's two minimum, you know, wage-paying jobs, it's a struggle.
Just one other thing I'd like to add is that, you know, there are more than just servers earning tips in Hawaii. And so the solution for the tip problem needs to be a little broader based. You have valets, you have nail salon people, hairdressers. There's a variety of people earning tips, and they all earn different amounts. And so I've always proposed at the legislature that the tip credit be based on a percentage of what the employee earns in tips so that it's fair. So if an employee is earning $50 an hour tips, then the employer can enjoy a larger tip credit and divert that money back to the, you know, to other people in the business. And if they're not earning that much, then they can't take that much. And I think a means-based tip credit is really a very practical solution.
We are about a minute and a half away from the end of our program. We want to get some final thought. Our guests are Tom Jones, Hawaii Restaurant Association, Randy Gontz of Young Progressives demanding action. Thanks first to you both for joining me.
Mahalo for the time. I really appreciate
this show.
Thank you for giving us a voice.
Absolutely.
One of the things, Catherine, that has struck me throughout this program is that, you know, we have a pro and a con minimum wage, and yet there are a great many things on which the two of you agree.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. And it's really important, especially when you go work in legislative work, is you really got it to work together to come to a common solution. And I think that's what we'll see this year at the state legislature. And if the listeners want to find out more information, you can go to www.HawaiiFightFor15.com. YPDA, Young Progressive Demand Action, is on a coalition of organizations that include Hawaii Appleseed, HAPA, Hawaii Alliance for Progressive Action, and others that are going to be supporting this initiative.
And the hospitality industry is a lot of people serving a lot of people. We're a people business. We care about our people, all of them.
Absolutely.
You know, that question that hovers behind all of these things, Catherine, and as you just alluded to, the fact that a lot of people have to work two jobs. So the larger issue is just flat out making a living in the state of Hawaii.
Right. And I think our conversation really centered around the fact that we need to really look at the bigger picture of the economic system that we have here and how we can support the working people. We want to keep people in Hawaii. We want people that have born and raised and live here or call it home to stay here. And we don't want to see everyone moving off island.
That's right.
Well, as long as you and I, Catherine, have been covering stories in Hawaii, that's been surfaced again and again, hasn't it?
It has, and your familiar faces in our studio, we've seen them at the legislature.
Well, thanks to our guests. Our guests have been Tom Jones, president and co-owner of Gyotaku Japanese Restaurant, past chairman of the Hawaii Restaurant Association, Randy Gantz, economic justice chair of the Young Progressives Demanding Action, and we thank all our listeners for taking part.
If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the Talkback line and leave your comments. That number is 808-792-8217. You can also send in an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation Podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. Join us tomorrow. We'll discuss the state of Hawaii's bridges. I'm Chris Vandercook.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.